It's Monday, the 30th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to Jordan Farmer. Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Dean Vasich. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be exactly like Dean Vasich, and somehow I don't know, Dean, how you've just managed to leave a review now after being a huge fan of the podcast and an avid listener for a while, but you have. If you want to be exactly like Dean and be a sponsor of the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and that's it. Simple as that. If you want to be like Moneyball and be a sponsor of the show and your company, hit me up. Email. I'm always looking for sponsors for the program. Moneyball is Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site, so make sure you're joining in with all the fun and frivolity that's happening over on Moneyball. And two listeners today in Moneyball's big GPP, big tournament, dueling it out for number one spot, had both of them tweeting at me without realizing the person they were competing against was another Red Rock listener. It was Dickens Art who came away with the victory, just over KO 785. And Dickens Art got the victory in the tournament, so congratulations to him. And also, he's got an awesome Instagram account for all of you guys on Instagram. His Instagram is at Large Drew, and over there, he sells NBA oil paintings, and you'll see quite a few there. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I saw this. You've got a nice DeMarcus Cousins one there, and I get the feeling, if I remember correctly, that DeMarcus Cousins liked it or tweeted it or saw it, or one of the players has seen one of his artworks and was a fan of it. So I'm a fan of those oil paintings as well. So if you're looking for some NBA artwork, Large Drew on Instagram has got a nice selection of oil paintings that you can check out. That's it. That's my plug for Large Drew's oil paintings. But congratulations to those guys on Moneyball today. Before I get into the standard part of the podcast, I just want to mention one thing about trades. And it came to me when someone tweeted at me today. They said, "Oh, should I trade John Wall for Al Horford?" John Wall's struggling, yes. Al Horford's in a little bit of a quiet patch, so I can understand doing the trade. But the thing that I need to not get off my chest, because I'm not angry, I'm not ranting, but it's more an understanding thing, is that's fine, but look what it does to your team, because they're completely different players, and their overall value might be the same, but it's going to have a massive effect. It's not trading John Wall for Reggie Jackson or John Wall for Chris Paul. It's going to have a massive change on your team. You're going to lose assists. You're going to lose steals, but you're going to get more rebounds, and you're going to get more blocks, and you're going to get a better field goal percentage. You're going to get better turnover. It depends. Now, overall, you'd say that what Horford is doing has been better than Wall this season, but Wall's got the ability to go out there and give you 10 assists and 2 steals. And if you're trading Wall away for Horford, but you rely on his 7 or 8 assists that he's getting now and his 2 steals that he's getting now, and you already have comfortable leads in rebounding and blocks, then there's no point to it. And I'm not saying this is the case of this person who's offering this trade, but it's something we need to think about, is that trades get, and I'm convinced that so many people in leagues, not you guys, some of you guys maybe, that do trades for the sake of doing trades because they want to do a trade, so that let's make sure we do a trade. But a trade like this, where maybe their overall value is similar, it might end up being really harmful to your team, because you rely upon John Wall's 8 assists. And yes, he might be struggling in other areas, but you might have them covered. So you really need to look at what you're doing. And if you have surplus point guards and you're just desperate for a big man and you need big man stats and you're punting assists or whatever you're doing, you need to have a look. You need to have a look at your team, because it's not as straightforward as trade John Wall for Al Horford because they're in a similar value, because there's going to be big positives in one area, there's going to be big negatives in the other area. And overall, with the way that affects your team and the way that affects your team's place in the standings, it might not be a good deal. And that's it. I hope that all made sense. A great way where you can check that out is on basketballmonster.com, where we have the trade analyzer, where you can see positives and negatives in each category from a trade, how that impacts your team in projected standings as well. So all that sort of stuff is there for you to have a look at. But it's just something that you need to pay attention to, because it's not just a simple war for Horford, because it's to do with their individual characteristics and the individual categories. Can you afford to lose John Wall's 2 steals? Can you afford to lose his 8 assists? If you're trading Horford, can you afford to lose his blocks? Can you afford to lose his 50% field goal percent? These are the things you need to look at. It's not as straightforward. Now, if it's in a points league, it's very straightforward. What points are they averaging? Do I think this guy can go higher? Do I think he'll go lower? Done. Dusted. Category league, roto league, very, very, very different, and you do need to pay attention to all of those things. All right, after all that preamble, Michael Bolton's getting he's getting anxious.
Let's get to it.
Thanks, Mick. The monstrous line of the night. Paul George, yet again. He's been pretty good this year. Another 39 points for George. 5 threes, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 1 block. 10 of 21 from the field. 14 of 17 from the free throw line. He started off the season shooting a really, really poor percentage from the field. That has obviously rectified. He's now up to 46 on the season. He's shooting over 50 for the last 2 weeks. Just been superb. And I think the biggest, and I'll admit I was off Paul George in the offseason. The projections we had him at came out, and they came back really solid. And I think I had him ranked at about 12 or 13 on my rankings list. Somewhere around that, so I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, it was somewhere around 12. But if it was coming to me in a draft at 12, I was hesitant in taking him. Not because I doubted his ability, but I doubted his confidence, maybe, or the fact that there'd be a lot of mental scars left over from the injury. Because pretty much everyone we've seen with this injury has dealt with mental scars, and it's affected their confidence. It's affected them physically as well. But for some reason, Paul George is a freak. He is like a robot. He has gotten not only better, but he has gotten considerably better. Like, not like marginally better. Instead of him getting, you know, I thought he'd be 10% worse than peak Paul George. That's where I thought he'd come back. He's like 30% better than peak Paul George. And I cannot understand how it's possible. It's happening. We know that it's happening, but it's still completely mind-blowing to me, the numbers. He's a clear top 10 player at the moment, and he's been superb. So kudos to Paul George it's a massive, massive mental effort for a guy who's had some some questionable off field or off court decisions and some off court mental mistakes. It's a real testament to his character and his strength, the way that he's come back from this, because we've seen it on so many people before that it just doesn't happen like this. But apparently for Paul George, it does. The waiver wire line of the night, I'm sure many people are going to be very, very happy to hear me say that the waiver wire line of the night is Aaron Aflalo. He played 41 minutes. He scored 31 points on pretty good shooting, 13 of 19. He had 2 threes, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1 steal. That's a huge, huge night from Aflalo. It was an overtime game, so that boosted his numbers a little bit. And there was no Carmelo Anthony, which absolutely screwed my daily fantasy team. Screwed it. I still managed to cash somehow in some of the lineups. Don't really know how, but that Mallow one killed it, because there was no inkling whatsoever that Mallow was sick or was any chance of missing that game. Neck minute, not playing after lineups had locked. So that was a stinker, but Aflalo really benefited there. But he's put up those numbers, but on the season, he's still not doing enough. He's averaging 13 points in 31 minutes. That's not good enough. 1.5 threes in 3.7 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.1 steals, 0.1 blocks on 45 and 67%. Those numbers are putrid. I'm not rushing out to grab him. You know that I'm not a believer in Aaron Aflalo, which is something that, you know, there's no bias talk from me here, because Aaron Aflalo 2 or 3 years ago, he was a guy that I loved. I loved Aaron Aflalo on Denver, early stages Orlando. I loved him in Detroit. But he's turned into a player who just I can't deal with from a fantasy point of view. This is a massive game. If you've got him and if someone offers you a trade, I'd take it, because there's a magnificent chance that he is not a top 150 player by the end of the year. I'd be surprised if he was, because he just doesn't do enough. This was huge. Maybe if Mallow is out extended periods of time and he has to take on more of a role, it happens. But to me, this was a bit of an outlier. He was also the daily fantasy value guy of the day at 4,300 and put up 46 points. So if anyone had him in their lineup, A, why? And B, congratulations, because that's puts you well on the way to winning. And outside of late swap guys playing on DraftKings, maybe you were able to get him in when Mallow went down. But otherwise, why was he in? I know that Houston is a tantalizing matchup, but Aflalo is not a tantalizing player. Kristaps Porzingis is the young gun of the night again. Now, I'm sighing because I had a question a few weeks ago, is Kristaps Porzingis the Knicks' best player? I said, no, not quite, but he's getting close. The argument is it's getting closer. Now, Melo is still the best player, but he is a clear number two. He put up 20 and 13 in 41 minutes, a steal, two blocks, really good shooting here, 8 of 13, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. He has been just... As much as it surprised me and it surprised Stephen A. Smith, who still loves to say his name like this,
Porzingis,
Kristaps Porzingis. He's been fantastic. He's a top 50 player this year. He's close to averaging a double double. In fact, the last 2 weeks he's at 17 and 10.5 with over a three a game, three blocks a game, 0.6 steals on 48 and 84 as his percentages. He has been superb. And if you're making an argument for Rookie of the Year, Karl Anthony Towns is up there, but is Porzingis the next guy? I said that sarcastically, the pronunciation. Is he the next guy? Is he the favorite? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Who's the favorite for Rookie of the Year? Is it Porzingis? Is it Towns? Is it Okafor? Yeah, the clear top three guys at the moment. Who's your favorite for Rookie of the Year at the moment? But onto fantasy stuff, he is just... It's pretty amazing that these rookies are coming in and putting up such fantastic numbers. And I'm just, I'm not a Derek Fisher fan. I was not a fan of him as a player. Definitely not a fan of him as a coach. But he is just letting him loose, and it's working brilliantly. And kudos to that, because there was so much talk, we're going to limit his minutes, but he's not. He's letting him run, and he's running wild, and it's awesome. It's so good. Remember how bad Knicks games were last year? Remember trying to watch a Knicks game? When you had Lance Thomas out there playing 25 minutes and jacking up shots, and Lance Thomas is still doing that, which is still a pain in the ass. But remember when he was their best player at times? Now you can, I'll search out on League Pass, I'll find a Knicks game. I want to watch a Knicks game, and that's because Porzingis is out there, and he's putting up. He just is, yeah. This is scratching the surface as well. I can't talk enough about Kristaps Porzingis. He's putting up so many good numbers. The dud of the night goes to a big man, Big Al Jefferson, who lasted just 7 minutes before succumbing to a calf strain, 1 point and one rebound, which kills you on the last day of a head-to-head matchup. So if you own Al Jefferson, like I do, I think in one league, not ideal for him. He's going to have an MRI on Monday to work out the severity of this strain. Yeah, there's nothing you can really do, and we'll talk about it a bit later, but what Charlotte did, there was no clear winner of guys that we need to go out and pick up in case he has to miss a week or two. They just spread the minutes all around. Speaking of spreading things all around, let's get to the box scores. That is a horrible, horrible segue, but, it is what it is. We're there now. Let's get onto these teams and start looking at these games from a fantasy point of view. And the first game, it was riddled with interesting scenarios, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Charlotte Hornets. Jason Kidd at us. Again, he moved Jabari Parker and Michael Carter-Williams to the bench, and in their place started Jared Bayless and OJ Mayo. And I've been banging on about Bayless for a while, about the minutes he's getting and about him having 10-team league value. I also did write about OJ Mayo in a waiver wire column on Basketball Monster saying, just watch this guy in deeper leagues. I didn't think he was going to come out and start the next game and play 44 minutes. He was a guy that preseason I was a little bit... high is not the right word. Intrigued by. Lost a lot of weight in an okay situation in a contract year. And he's played really well after coming back from the hamstring. OJ Mayo went 12, 4, and 5 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Now, does he stick in the starting lineup? I don't think that it's necessarily a permanent thing. But if you're looking for some short-term value in a 14-team league, I don't mind adding OJ Mayo. He's not going to play 44 minutes every night. I'm pretty confident about that. But he had, I think, 30 in the last game, 25 before that. The minutes were definitely trending in the right direction. And he was a clear top 100 guy a couple of seasons back in Dallas. Now, that is a few seasons removed, but he's dealt with illness. He's dealt with being fat. And hopefully all those things are done, because he's not fat anymore. He's not sick anymore. He's pushed himself back into the starting lineup. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Bucks continue to run this because they are an absolute mess at the moment. Michael Carter-Williams down to the bench, 16 minutes for him, 3, 4, and 2. I'm okay dropping him. And that's because a number of things. A, I don't think he's a very good basketball player. And once the coaches work that out and then put him on the bench, then the hope of him coming back, it's not high. So I'm okay moving on from Michael Carter-Williams if you own him. I own him in a deep 12-team league with about 170 players rostered. So I'm considering holding him in that one, but it's by no means a definite if he's going to be less than 20 minutes a night, because they could run Bayless, Mayo. And he got 16 minutes a night here with General Grievous Vasquez out. So that's a massive concern too. So let's see. But if there's someone, look, if you have Jared Bayless on your waiver wire, I'd be okay just making that quick switch and getting Bayless, because Bayless's minutes have been awesome all year. He had 11, 6, and 6 here on some Michael Carter-Williams-like percentages, 4 of 14 and 1 of 2. But he's been really good this season. A lot of assists, a lot of threes, a lot of scoring, decent steals. He's been good. And Carter-Williams hasn't, so I'd be okay making that move. The other guy that went to the bench, Jabari Parker, played 17 minutes and went 10-7. He was someone who I was not keen on at all this season. He will be better than this. He will get more than 17 minutes moving forward. But does it necessitate owning him? I don't think it does. I really don't think that there's a huge amount to be gained by holding on to Jabari Parker through this through these tough times, through his rehab, because he's rehabbing an ACL, which he did 11 months ago. He's not good. No, that's not true. He's a good player, but he's not good in terms of he's not healthy. He's not fully back. So it's pretty hard to hold on to Jabari Parker at the moment. John Henson's getting a solid roll off the bench now. So that 18-minute roll, it's only for deep leagues, but he had 5 rebounds and a block. And Jason Kidd is sort of back to being a bit more lenient of John Henson, I guess, playing him. Like Johnny O'Brien didn't play at all in this game. And that's really the way it should be, because Johnny O'Brien is not that good. But it's always Jason Kidd. There's always going to be a little something where you go, what are you doing? Like, what? Seriously. Chris Middleton back to his best, 19, 5, and 6 with four threes and 3 steals. There were people who were dropping Chris Middleton earlier on this season who were disappointed by him. Fair enough, you were disappointed by him, but he was never someone you should have dropped, and he's putting up the numbers now. He's definitely repaying some faith. He's almost a top 50 guy, over 2 threes a game, 3 assists, 1.5 steals. He needs that field goal percent. And another one of those guys whose struggles are stemming from poor shooting. He's at 40% this year. He was at 47 last year. But the last 2 weeks, he's back at 46, and he's a top 40 player in that time. He's top 20 over the last 4 games. Hopefully he's not floating around on your waiver wire, because that needs to stop. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 8, 5, and 3, a steal and a block. Everyone who was really, really hyped with the way he started the season, and me included, and the people who were super hyped to draft him in the top 50, where some people were drafting him, are going to be really disappointed with what he's doing lately. He has dropped off considerably with his level of play and with his output. He's still been pretty good, but things have they've cooled off a bit. But he's still able to produce in a number of areas. And as a shooting guard eligible guy, the rebounds are really nice. And you love the fact that he's shooting 54% from the field this season, and he's got his free throws right up as well. Definitely an improved guy. But he has looked a little bit like he's tailing off of late. Onto the Hornets, mentioned that Al Jefferson went down. So they played 16 minutes for Spencer Hawes, 17 for Frank Kaminsky, 16 minutes for Cody Zeller. So there's no clear. Tyler Hansbrough got 9 minutes. No real clear winner there. Yeah, surprisingly to me, Jefferson going down, Cody Zeller played less minutes than he'd been playing before, so I don't really get what the story is there. Marvin Williams played 37. He went 12-7 with 3 threes and a block. Continues to have value in a situation where I just wish that he wouldn't, but he does. So we obviously need to still own Marvin Williams. Nick Batum, 15, 5, and 5 with 3 threes and 2 steals. And Kemba Walker, another good shooting night from Kemba. 7 of 13 for him. 22 points, 3 assists, 3 steals, 3 threes, and a block. He continues to block shots at a pretty phenomenal rate. He's averaging in his last 4, 2 blocks a game. He's actually at 1.3 blocks a game across his last 7 games. Averaging 23.5 points, 2 threes, and almost 5 assists, shooting 55% from the field. He's still at 46% from the field during the season, and this is such a big jump from last season. You'd have to think there is some regression, but with the way that the Hornets are spreading out the court and with the additional shooters, he's getting more room. He's not relied upon as heavily. He's taking 2 less shots a game, so that he's not the complete offensive focal point that he has been in the past, and it is helping his shot selection because a lot of his misses were, oh shit, we don't know what to do. 5 seconds left, give it to Kemba. Maybe he can do something. And there was like, you know, double team threes and all that sort of stuff. So that was a massive, massive part of his poor shooting. And it's not completely fair to put all that on him. Jeremy Lamb with another big night, 14-9 with 3 threes in 27 minutes. He probably has to be owned in 12-team leagues at this point, but there is definitely room for him to regress back down. But you love the 9 rebounds from him, and he has been getting steals at a decent rate, just not in today's game. The next game we look at is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Clippers. Gorgui Dieng is alive. He played 25 minutes, 14-10, a steal and a block. And Karl Anthony Towns is at 20, played 26 minutes for 17-8 with 3 steals and a block. Gorgui Dieng is a guy that it's been really hard to own him. And I stressed a lot of the time, you know, hold, hold, hold. And eventually I said, well, you know what? You probably can't hold him anymore. But his ability to produce is fantastic. What you need to do now is you need to look at the way the minutes are coming up. They're increasing. He's played 26 in the last four. And this one, Towns was limited. Yeah, only down to 26, but 26 minutes and 25 minutes equals 51. So that means that they didn't just exclusively play in place of each other. They were getting some time together, and that trend is increasing. So maybe Sam Mitchell realizes something that he should have realized 4 months ago when he was an assistant coach last season. Whenever Towns arrived, he's an assistant coach, that these guys is the best pairing in the front court, and that's what they should be doing. I'm okay adding Dieng in 12 team leagues. You want him to push 27. You want him to get to 27 minutes. 24 is okay, and there's a little bit of value there just outside the top 100. But get him to 27, we're talking top 80, top 70. 14-10 for him with a steal and a block, as I mentioned. Zach LaVine started again for Ricky Rubio, 18-7 with 3 threes. And I think that LaVine has to be owned in 12-team leagues, not because he's going to usurp Ricky Rubio's starting role, but Kevin Martin is just stinking, like just terrible. 23 minutes for Martin, 2 and 3. And when Rubio comes back, I wouldn't be shocked, and I would hope that they would do this, is play LaVine next to Rubio and play him 30 minutes and play Rubio 32 minutes and play him together. It's going to be the best thing for Levine's fantasy vote. It's the best thing for his development, and it's the best thing for the team. And I hope that Mitchell realizes this is the way it should be. You should be playing Rubio and Levine. You should play Wiggins at the 3, and you should play Dieng and Towns at the 4 and 5. That's your best lineup. Not this other crap of Tayshaun Prince, of Kevin Garnett, of Nemanja Bjelica. Like, your best lineup is Dieng, Towns, Levine, Wiggins, Rubio. And that needs to start getting more minutes. So LaVine should be owned. Dieng is okay for a pickup now. And obviously, if you still own Dieng, you're holding on to him after this recent trend of Towns having some limited minutes, but of also of them playing together. Bjelica did return in this game after missing about 5 or 6 with a knee injury. 22 minutes for him, 10 points, 2 threes, a rebound, 2 rebounds and an assist. He was really efficient shooting 4 of 4 from the field, but he's not someone that I want to own in fantasy leagues, in standard leagues anyway. I've been not anti him, but I just did not think he was able to sustain the production that he put up earlier on. On the Clippers, Blake Griffin, 26, 8 and 8, a 3, 2 blocks. It's a pretty stock standard, awesome 9 from Griffin. Chris Paul went 20 points with 9 assists as well. So nice nights from those guys. JJ Redick, 18 and 2 with 2 threes. And they made a change to the starting lineup. They put Luke Richard, Mute into the starting lineup, replacing Wes Johnson, who then went down to 4 minutes. They cannot get this small forward position right. You know who they'd love? You know it'd be awesome for the Clippers if they had now? Matt Barnes. But stupidly traded him away for Lance Stephenson. Mute had 7 points in 23 minutes. He's not an ownable guy. Lance Stephenson actually played 20 here and went 9 and 6 with a 3, but still not owning him. Paul Pierce down to 10 minutes. Wes Johnson down to 4. That's just a mess there. Jamal Crawford down to 15 minutes and stunk. 0 points, 2 assists. He is not a hold in 12. He was when Redick was out and he was getting those big minutes. And when Chris Paul was out, he is not a hold anymore. DeAndre Jordan struggled from the free throw line significantly. 3 of 12, but you're aware of that. And he went 3 of 3 from the field. 9 and 9 with a steal and a block. And there was someone, and I apologize, I don't remember who it was, that was tweeting at me about 16-team roto league they're in and they're trying to trade away. They're trading away DeAndre Jordan, and who's the best combo to get back? It doesn't really matter. If you get rid of DeAndre Jordan in a roto league, you're winning. And I think the options he was getting back was Kevin Love as one of them. Like, it's a massive win. Even if Love does lose 20 spots of value with Kyrie Irving come back, you've already won. And I, whoever that was that was tweeting, I mean, I need to get back to you with some more information, which I'll do after the podcast is finished. But yeah, Jondre Jordan in a roto is, it's going to hurt significantly. You'll get, you know, you might jump from a 1 in free throw percentage up to an 8 or a 9 just by losing him. And you need to do it early on because, you know, the longer you go by having him there, the harder a hole it is to dig out of. And you're also going to punish your opposition's free throw percentage, so they're going to come down too. So that's good. Detroit and Brooklyn. Marcus Morris, he just, I don't know. He plays a lot of minutes and he's just not good, but the stats do sort of come. 7 points, which is not ideal, but still 3 steals, 3, 2 assists. The numbers are there. We still own him. I like that Stanley Johnson played 27 minutes. That was good to see. 10 points for him, 2 threes, 5 rebounds. The numbers are sort of trending up for him, and he's going to be a guy that is a must-own player at some point. It's not there yet, but when we get into next year, I would say, you know, around All-Star break, that's when we'll really be looking at Stanley Johnson. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had a pretty poor shooting night, 6 of 17, but had 21 points with 7 rebounds. And Andre Drummond went 20 and 18 with 3 steals and a block and didn't want to be outdone by DeAndre Jordan. He went 2 of 11 from the free throw line. Reggie Jackson's minutes are being limited at the moment. Stan Van Gundy is limiting him to about 30 minutes a night. Did it again here. Now, he brutalized your field goal percentage. 4 of 20, 8 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, and a steal. So the 9 assists you still like, but you hate that shooting percentage, and you wish that he would get 35 minutes. But yeah, historically, Van Gundy hasn't been that guy who gives big minutes to point guards. You know, all through the Jameer Nelson days in Orlando, he wasn't giving 35, 36 minutes to his starter. So that is a concern with Jackson. I'm not concerned in the slightest about Brandon Jennings, but it's more that the Van Gundy artificial ceiling that he places on his point guards is somewhat of a concern. He's still a really, really good player. He's going to have much better nights than this, but there's that worry, of course. Spencer Dinwiddie he didn't play in the game, but it wasn't because of his sore knee. They just decided to run with Steve Blake, which is not something that I can get behind at all. On the Brooklyn Nets, we almost had another 5x5. That's two near 5x5s in the last 3 days. Brook Lopez, probably one of the least guys that I'd expect to get a 5x5, played 36 minutes and had 15 points, which is very, especially on 6 of 18 shooting, it's very un-Brook Lopez-like. 3 of 5 from the free throw line is also very un-Brook Lopez. But 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 6 blocks. That is a huge performance from Lopez. I want someone to get a 5x5. It's been a while since we had one. I think the last one was Nick Batum. From memory, it's been a while. Thad Young, 19 and 10 with a steal and a block. Jarrett Jack, 11, 5 and 4. And Joe Johnson, 13 and 5. And we had probably our first quiet Rondae Hollis-Jefferson game in a while. He only played 21 minutes as a starter. Just was not effective. 2 points, 4 rebounds, 1 block and no steals. Not a good night for him. And Lionel Hollins just doing standard Lionel Hollins things. Wayne Ellington played 24 minutes out of nowhere. Hadn't been playing really at all. 12 and 6 for him with a 3-pointer, which is relatively effective. But I can't get behind him getting minutes over Bogdanović or over Hollis Jefferson. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Andrea Bargnani suffered a hamstring strain. So all you Andrea Bargnani owners, let's hope he's all right. The Boston Celtics and the Orlando Magic. Isaiah Thomas again with another 20 points and 7 assists. He's pretty rock solid, as is Jared Sullinger. Just doing it in so many different areas. Only 3 points, but 11 rebounds, 3 steals and 3 blocks. Putting up some fantastic fantasy value. He needs to be owned everywhere. Jay Crowder, yeah, pretty substandard game. But to be honest, Jay Crowder's a substandard player. He was getting by a lot on his steals value early on, and he still has to be owned. But he's just a guy that I just don't think is a good player. And I'm going to get to another one of those guys later. They're guys who I just don't think are good players, and if there's a chance for them to upgrade their position or to move things around, they don't feel locked into me. So that's my concern with Jay Crowder. 12 points for him, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. So still not bad production, but he's just, I don't know. There's just something about him that doesn't work for me. Avery Bradley had 17 points with 2 threes. Not a huge amount else, but he's still locked in as a must-own guy for now. And the bench, not really much to write home about there. A nice 11-point performance from David Lee, but it's just too up in the air to really know what to do with any of those big bench guys. If you're in 14-team leagues, Lee and Olynyk need to be owned, obviously, but not for 12-teamers. The Orlando Magic, another win and a huge one here. Scott Skiles is a genius. Victor Oladipo, 30 minutes off the bench. 19, 8 and 6, 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block, and that's perfect. That is exactly what you want Victor Oladipo to do. Now, I was critical of Skiles' management of this team. I was critical not of moving Victor Oladipo to the bench, but of moving to the bench and playing in 24 minutes. That's what I'm critical of. Moving to the bench, playing 30 minutes, perfect, awesome. Playing 32 minutes, but just playing, if you're going to play him for spacing and shooting and whatever you want, you're playing minutes, and that's fine. Andrew Nicholson is becoming cheeky. 23 minutes for him, 14 and 8 with 2 threes and 2 blocks. You have to own him in a 14-team league. It's not quite a 12-team league situation, but it's getting interesting, isn't it? Aaron Gordon showed us his potential, 12 and 5 with 2 threes and a block. Not owning him yet either, while Toby Harris went 15 and 11. Another 32-minute night for Vucevic, so pleased with that. You just don't know when it's not going to be the case. 18 and 10 for him. And Channing Frye, 6 points, both on threes with a steal and a block. And even though he's starting, he's playing limited minutes. And that's one of those things that does frustrate me. As you know, Evan Fournier, 20 minutes in the start. So he's gone from 45 minutes a game to 20 minutes a game. But he was dealing with a hip problem before the game. So you'd have to think that that had some impact on it. 9 points for him with an assist and a steal. You have to keep owning him. But the minutes are definitely trending the wrong way for Fournier. And Lord Alfred Payton played 35. Killed percentage, 2 of 12, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal and a block, but contributed in the other areas exactly as you would have hoped that he would have when you drafted him. The Philadelphia 76ers could not get a victory, but they do have one of my favorite players, Robert Covington, Bob Cov. 37 minutes for Bob Cov, 12 points, 2 threes, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 7 steals, and a block. This guy, I couldn't have harped on any more about, my God, you have to hold Robert Covington. He's a must-own player. He's a must-own player. And I hope every single one of you listening either owned him and held on, or when someone dropped him, went and grabbed him, because he's averaging 6 steals a game in his last 4. Averaging. 17 points, 3.3 threes in these last 4 games, 8.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, a block. He's a top 5 player in the last week. Top 5. And he's not going to be a top 5 player this season, I can assure you of that. But he's a top 50 player. Now, I'm pretty confident he's going to be a top 60 player. I'm pretty confident. He has been absolutely fantastic. And hopefully you were all able to jump on mistakes of other people who dropped him. Nerlens Noel was out in this one. He's a real concern at the moment. And Jahlil Okafor is having a bit of a slump. 9 points for Jahlil. 13 rebounds. And some just real poor shooting. 3 of 11 from him. Isaiah Cannon still in the starting lineup. Effective. 16 points with 4 threes and 2 steals and 3 assists. He's really great for scoring and assists. He's going to hurt your field goal percentage though. So you just need to have a look at what you need, because he can have value in certain situations. Jeremy Grant's another interesting player on this team. 2 steals, 3 blocks for him. 11 points, 7 rebounds. And producing pretty decent numbers. But does it continue with Noel back? And you think, yeah, this is putting up numbers, but he's only averaging 1.7 blocks on the year and 0.7 steals and half a three. Now, he's a guy who could be a triple one guy, but those season-long numbers are in 28 minutes, so it's not like he hasn't been playing big minutes. He's not a good field goal shooter. He's not a good free throw shooter. He's a decent rebounder, and he's a wishy-washy, up-and-down defensive stats sort of guy. If you're convinced that he's going to continue to get 30 minutes, 28 minutes a night with Noel back in the lineup, you can use him in certain spots. But he's not a must-own guy. My favorite player from last year, Jakar Sampson, started and played 12 minutes. He had 9 points with 2 steals and a block there as well. And TJ McConnell, I know Mark Roberts is pleased with this. He took his first free throw of the season. He missed it. 22 minutes for McConnell, 7 points, 6 assists. He's still helping you in assists. But the fact that he's been demoted and the fact that he's playing less minutes now does not bode well for when Kendall Marshall and Tony Roden come back. He is going to be done as a fantasy valuable player. You can still be using his 6 assists, but he's hurting you in pretty much every other category at the moment. So that could be a concern. And I'm not thinking he's a must-own player. Neither is Nick Stauskas, because he's on the bench, 13 minutes, 5 points, lots of ones across the rest of his box score. For the Memphis Grizzlies, big night from Conley, 24 and 5 with 2 blocks. Marc Gasol went 9 and 12 with a steal and 4 blocks. And Matt Barnes didn't start because Zach Randolph was back, but he still was really good. 27 minutes for Barnes, 13 and 8, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 1 3. 14 team leagues have got to be all over Matt Barnes, and deeper 12s definitely. If you believe in Matt Barnes, which is quite hard to do at times, I'll give you that, he can be a 12-team relevant guy. And he's one of those guys that even when he starts getting hot, nobody believes him. Nobody believes in Matt Barnes when Matt Barnes becomes... If Matt Barnes is a top 50 guy... There was times when Matt Barnes, a couple of seasons ago, for about 4 weeks was a top 20 player and he was about 10% owned. Nobody believes in Matt Barnes. So I can understand not grabbing him now because it's sort of a speculative thing. I think he's going to keep 28 minutes a night and be producing. But if he locks in at 30 minutes, forget about it. He's a must-own guy in 12-team leagues. Jeff Green... If I'm choosing between Matt Barnes and Jeff Green, I'm taking Barnes, even if they play similar minutes. 28 minutes for Green here, 13 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, nothing too exciting there. And Zebo returned and was very Zebo-ish, 17 and 11 with a steal and nothing else. Tony Allen started, played 19 minutes. Mario Chalmers, remember when he was a thing a week ago? 15 minutes for him with 5 points, 3 rebounds and 2 assists. I think pretty needless to say, if you picked up Mario Chalmers on the back of those ludicrous free throw nights, you're pretty safe to move on from him. Now, the next game, the Phoenix Suns and the Toronto Raptors. Some pretty weird names at the top of the value for the box score for the Suns. When you got Mirza Teletovic hitting 6 threes for 20 points, and that's where he's valuable. If you want threes and scoring, he's going to give you that. Not a huge amount else. And it's probably unsustainable for him to go 6-7 from 3, but he's getting decent minutes and you have to pay attention to him, much like you'd have to do with TJ Warren, who played 30 minutes here, 15 and 11, 3 blocks and a steal. I'm going to say that TJ Warren's a guy that you want in pretty much all 12 team leagues at this point. Not, it doesn't have to be every league, but there's enough there to say that, you know what, PJ Tucker's just not producing. Warren's having a bigger role and he's being really, really valuable for this team. So TJ Warren's a guy that I like adding in most formats. 25 and 11 for Eric Bledsoe with 3 blocks. Brandon Knight, 16, 6 and 4. So just solid nights from those guys. Tyson Chandler was out and they started Alex Len. Surprisingly, they gave Len 28 minutes. I did not see it coming. 8 and 7 for Len. Not a great night. I'm not adding Alex Len anywhere. And Markieff Morris only played 24 minutes. Now he did deal with foul trouble. Everyone is ready to drop Markieff Morris again. I'm not dropping Markieff Morris. 7 and 8 for him on bad shooting as well. 3 of 12. I'm not dropping him. John Lua had 16 points in 23 minutes, but he's not good. He's not a good player. He's not as good as Markieff Morris. And Teletovic is not... I like Teletovic, but I don't think he's going to get minutes over Morris. So if someone drops Markieff Morris, which is going to happen, I can assure you Markieff Morris is going to be dropped. He's going to be dropped by some of you guys, and that's your choice. I just would not be doing it, and I'd be looking at adding him wherever I can. Jeff Hornacek played Ronnie Price 22 minutes, which is a travesty considering Devin Booker and Archie Goodwin did not get in the game at all. Onto the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, 29 points with 7 assists, continues his pretty solid season. Kyle Lowry, a little bit down, but 17, 8 and 5 with 4 threes, you'll take that. And Damari Carroll, we talked about him on yesterday's show about his field goal percentage being a real drag. Well, he got it back up here and he was awesome. 20 and 7 with 3 threes and 2 steals. You can't buy low off that performance, but hopefully you were able to do that after we talked about it the other day. Bismack Biyombo, 33 minutes, 2 points. At least he took 3 shots. It's a shock. But another 4 blocks and 8 rebounds. He's strictly a blocks and rebounds guy. And if that's what you want, knock yourself out. Luis Scola played 18 minutes. That's disappointing. Patrick Patterson, 16 minutes. I'm glad we got to see Bebe Noguera, though, who played 6 minutes. He's not doing anything in fantasy leagues this year, but I just like to see him out on the court. Corey, they went small, the Raptors, so they played played a lot of Damari Carroll at the 4 with Corey Joseph in the best 5. He played 33 minutes, 9 and 5 with 2 blocks and a 3. I'm okay looking at Joseph in 12-team leagues, but I don't think that he's a must-add guy because the next game, Scola could play 27 minutes and Joseph could play 23. When Terrence Ross was out earlier this year, Corey Joseph was a must-own player, so we know that he can have standard league value, but I'm just not convinced that it's going to retain for the rest of the season. The Houston Rockets and the New York Knicks. Trevor Ariza had a big night, 16 and 7, 2 threes and 2 steals. James Harden, not his greatest performance, 26, 7 and 9, especially going 6 of 10 from the line. But overall, a pretty decent performance. But the story for the Rockets, I think, was a couple. Clint Capela, 18 and 11 in 36 minutes, 3 steals and a block. He has to be owned everywhere. Now, there is going to be an issue with Clint Capela, and that issue is his free throw percentage. That is going to be a concern. He went 4 of 8 from the free throw line. The free throw attempts are going to go up and he's not going to hit them. So you need to be in a position to deal with that. Now, when I say he's a must own, if you're a team who is built off, you know, good free throw percentage, he could single-handedly and come and wreck it. So you could be a one in a roto league, you could drop to a five. You could be a dominant free throw in a head-to-head, and you could become to a middle-of-the-pack team. It could be that sort of impact. So I'm okay adding him and, you know, seeing how it plays out with your team, but be wary. But his upside is fantastic. He steals, blocks, points, rebounds. He is just a superb player to watch on the court. He's got a massive field goal percentage. But watching him play, when he gets out, he can switch onto guards. He was one of the only guys in the playoffs last year who could really switch as a big man and get out onto Curry and cause him a problem. He's got tremendous athleticism in that way. So it's good to see him getting this opportunity. And it's actually working next to him and Dwight Howard. So that is very interesting. Howard was limited a bit here because it's the first of a back-to-back, and he was going to play both legs and then limit his minutes somewhat. 30 minutes for him here, 14 and 6. Not a terrible night, but you're glad that he's getting back to playing in these back-to-backs and getting his minutes back up. I said there was two stories in Houston, and the other one is Ty Lawson. He was a healthy scratch. He played 19 minutes a game before and 2 minutes the game before that. He shouldn't be owned in any 12-team leagues. He shouldn't be owned in any 14-team leagues. Now, there's going to be nights where he doesn't play. There's going to be nights when he plays backup minutes and he's preferred to Jason Terry, but I'm convinced that they're going to go with Terry more often than they go with Lawson. So just don't deal with Ty Lawson. The other story in Houston is Terrence Jones. What do we do with him? He played 25 minutes off the bench, 8-4 with a 3 and a block. And this is why I said earlier about guys who I don't think are good players like Jay Crowder. I don't think Terrence Jones is a good player. And I've said this for years and years, is that the Rockets want someone to replace him. They are aching for someone to replace him. And I think they've found someone. I thought Donatas Montiunas would be that guy this year, but this back injury has been a lot slower to heal than we thought it might have. But maybe Capella's the guy to replace him. And then when Montiunas comes back, what the hell happens to Jones then? I think that really impacts him. Look, he's shooting a putrid 28% over the last week, 37% over his last 2 weeks. He's at 44% on the season, and he's a bad free throw shooter. He's not doing enough to be owned in standard leagues. I would preach a little bit of patience with him, but I can understand the frustration. Look, if I'm choosing between dropping Terrence Jones and Danny Green, which I know a lot of people will be thinking, I'm definitely dropping Terrence Jones because I just don't think he's any good. I don't think he's a good player. Now, I had him high in my rankings at the start of the season because I thought, okay, Montiunas is going to be out. They're going to have to give him decent minutes to start the season, and they're going to probably start him with 27, 30 minutes a game. And he can be a really useful fantasy contributor in those minutes. But if he's going to go to the bench and he's going to get marginalized further with Montiunas coming back, forget about it. He's just not good enough to demand minutes. He's not good enough to say, this is my spot. I'm the power forward. Nothing is changing. He's just not good enough for that. So they might have found someone in Capella to replace him. Montiunas is the other guy. It is not looking very, very good for Terrence Jones, so I am okay with dropping him. That's my Terrence Jones soliloquy. On to the Knicks. We've talked to Flalo. We've talked to Porzingis. I have to stop saying that because I'm going to get stuck in the habit of saying this.
Porzingis.
So let's go back to Porzingis. But my boy, Kevin Serafin. Yes. 32 minutes for Serafin. 14 and 7. 4 blocks and a steal. He's another guy that I've hyped on about probably ridiculously at times throughout my life. All he needs is an opportunity. And he got a big one here and he was able to produce. Fantastic. Watch this guy only. Definitely. Because Robin Lopez just is struggling now. He was poo last year, Robin Lopez. He was really, really bad. And I don't want to hear that he was bad because he had a hand injury, because he was bad before the hand injury. He was bad after it. He was bad. And he is worse this year. He is producing pretty much nothing. Derek Fisher is very quick to give him the hook. And I'm okay with dropping Robin Lopez as well because, and quite frankly, Kevin Serafin has the ability to play in this league. He can be an offensive threat. I don't necessarily think he's better than Lopez, but it's a possibility. I'm okay with dropping Robin Lopez. Jose Calderon played 38 minutes. Didn't really thrill us that much. 7-5-4, but the minutes are obviously still in his camp. And Langston Galloway, 4 points in his 26 minutes. He can be left alone in 12-team leagues, I think. Lance Thomas got the start in place of Mello. Played 36 and had 15 points with a 3. I just want them to give Cleanthony early minutes. They gave him 6 minutes here, but it's not enough. I want them to start Cleanthony early in that spot and let him play 30 minutes. Just put him out there. That's my next thing. Seraphin got the minutes. My next one's Cleanthony early. We'll see how that works. The last game of the night, the Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Lakers. A good night from Monte Ellis to go along with Paul George. He had 15 points with 6 assists. Jan Mahimi, 10 rebounds and 2 blocks. He's a must-own in 12-team leagues for me, Mahimi. George Hill, 11 and 6. Solid. Jordan Hill returned, grabbed 10 boards in 20 minutes. He's a deeper league guy for me. Not too exciting for standard leagues, but he has some streaming ability. And CJ Miles, this is what happens with Miles. He gave you 9 points, still gave you 2 threes. But he went 3 of 13 from the field. He went 2 of 9 from 3. And that's going to be the problem. There's going to be fluctuations in his field goal percentage, but he's definitely a must-own player. On the Lakers, Kobe Bryant did play, and on Kobe, he announced his retirement today. Initially, when the news came out, people were thinking, is he retiring immediately? Like, no, he's not. He's playing out the season. He had to retire because, yeah, he said his body wasn't allowing him to play, and it's pretty clear that it's not, because he's just not the same guy. He shot 4 of 20 today. He's probably one of the worst players in the league at the moment who is getting meaningful minutes, and it's sad for a guy who's that good to go out. I'm not a massive fan of Kobe Bryant as a player. I am a massive fan of Kobe Bryant from an interview point of view. I love watching Kobe Bryant talk. I love hearing him talk. I love watching him give interviews. Superb. As a player, not his greatest supporter, and he's really struggling at the moment. But he still can have some fantasy value this year, believe it or not. In a roto league, no. But in a punt field goal percentage situation, I've got him on one of my teams. He played 33 minutes, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 threes, and a steal. That's some okay production. And you're punting field goals, so you don't care that he went 4 of 20. Byron Scott's not going to change things. He's not going to say, Kobe, go back and play 17 minutes and be a facilitator. He's not going to do it. That's not Byron Scott's mentality. It's the best for the team, but he won't do it. So Kobe, it still has value in some fantasy leagues. Jordan Clarkson was tremendous again, 22, 10, and 6 with 2 threes. He was dropped in leagues. He needs to be owned. Roy Hibbert, 9 rebounds and 2 blocks, a nice performance from him. D'Angelo Russell only got the 26 minutes here, so that is disappointing in my mind. Because Nick Young got 28 minutes, which who knows why. Russell, 8 and 7 with 3 assists. He's a really strong rebounding point guard. I'm still owning him in all 12ers. And Nick Young, I said before, played 28 minutes, but he was pretty hot. He was he hit 6 threes. He had 22 points. But overall, there's not a huge amount of appeal in Nick Young. I wouldn't have thought. All right, that does it for the start of the podcast. Let's have a little bit of a break. And then we'll be back to talk daily fantasy for Monday. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now when you're someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your own. Back. Thank you again to Bryce Whitney, one of the big supporters of the podcast, for letting me use his band's song there. It is called Don't Go, and the band is called Columbia. And you can find links to that and all the music played on the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball podcast in the show notes, either on redrockbasketball.com or on hardwoodparoxysm.com. And a big shout out to the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcast Network, who went past 1 million downloads today. So a big shout out to all the guys on the other podcasts, Quo Vadimus, Over and Back, Podium Game, Heat Check. I'm sure there's other ones that I'm forgetting. The Wolves Wired, there's a number of podcasts on that network. So we went over 1 million downloads. So that's a great effort from all those guys. And make sure you do subscribe to the other podcasts on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. All right, let's look at these games now for Monday. There are eight of them. The first game is the Celtics and the Heat. The Heat are favored by 5. The total is a paltry 194. Luol Deng is doubtful. There is almost zero chance that Luol Deng plays in this game. A couple of other guys are ill for the Heat, and that is Chris Anderson and Amari Stoudemire. But their value in fantasy is pretty small, so I don't think we need to worry about there. But the fact that Luol Deng is out, Gerald Green becomes someone we want to own. He put up 27 in the last game in just 27 minutes. He was red hot scoring the ball. He's priced at 3,700. It's going to be real tough to build a winning lineup without Gerald Green in it, I think. Justice Winslow at 3,800 is also worth a punt. Now, he hasn't really excelled with Luol Deng out because his minutes have stayed pretty similar. But at 3,800, if he gives you 22 points, that can have merit in a cash game because it's solid. He's really consistent, giving you that 18 to 20 points, which again is not massive high ceiling, but it's consistent. And that's great for a cash game sort of situation. And that will allow you to put some other high price players in. If you can get a consistent 20 points out of a 3,800 guy, it's not bad. Jared Sullinger at 6,100, he's averaging 35 across the last three, which is really good. So I'm okay using him, but against the Heat, it's not superb because such a low total. They've got a good defense. Not sure it's a great spot. Same goes with Isaiah Thomas at 7,300. The Heat just nullify opposition point guards. And I don't really know what I do because they're going up against Hassan Whiteside. It's not that Goran Dragic is killing them. So Isaiah Thomas, even though he's averaging 35, to put up 7,300 on him, it feels like not a great option when there are some other players out there that we can look at in our Monday slate. Speaking of Hassan Whiteside, he's at 8,400. He needs to do more than what he's averaging to bring back that sort of value. He's really consistent around that 35-point mark, but it needs to be way more than that at 8,400. So I don't think I'd be looking at him in many spots. And aside from that, there's no one who really else screams value where we could punt on Goran Dragic, I guess, but he's still at 5,600, so you still want him to go 27, 30 points, and it just seems so far off for him at the moment. So I don't think I want to go there. You can't rely on Amir Johnson for minutes. Chris Bosh is at 7,900. He needs to be able to do a lot more than he's doing. He's averaging 32 across the last five. You need him to give you 37, 38, or 36, that sort of level. And I'm not really sure that he's going to get there in such a game that's with a low total. The next game up is the Houston Rockets and the Detroit Pistons. And Houston is just a boon for opposition teams in terms of their fantasy value. So there's quite a bit for us to have a look at here in this one. Clint Capela, though, at 4,600 on the Rockets side of things, pretty much has to be used. Another 38 points for him today, averaging 28.4 across the last three. The salary hasn't come up yet. You'd think the minutes will be there. He's a guy that has awesome value. Pat Beverley, now the starter as well, at 3,600. That's basically minimum salary. Put up almost 23 today. He's a really solid, cheap point guard option too. On the Pistons side, you can take a punt on Stanley Johnson. He is minimum salary. He put up 18.5 today in 27 minutes. And a Rockets team who allows guys on the wing to get a lot more points happening. So he could be a 24, 25 point guy. Yeah, that could happen for him. So he's an okay guy in a tournament. Marcus Morris, a guy that I'm not all that pleased with, but you're against the Rockets. Things are going to happen for these guys. And it's 5,900. He could be a 30-point performer. So I think that he has value. You can take a punt on Ersan Ilyasova at 4,200 as well. And Andre Drummond at 9,300. I think that he'll be really keen to get after Dwight Howard. He would have heard Stan Van Gundy talking to him about Dwight Howard, especially leading up to this game. You know, Dwight used to do this. Dwight used to do this. This is what I want you to be like, Dwight. He's going to go up against Dwight, and I'm going to think there's going to be some motivation. Not that he needs much motivation. He put up a 47-point performance today. He's back under that 10,000 mark at 9,300. I think he is one of the better high-priced guys because if you put these other cheap options in, like you got a Stanley Johnson in there or Pat Beverley or Justice Winslow or Gerald Green, you can afford to put a $9,000 guy in there. Now, the problem with putting Drummond in is that you're not going to have Clint Capela in your lineup if you're on FanDuel, but obviously on other sites with utilities and that, you can do it. Just have a look and see how you can structure the rest of your team. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is valuable at 4,800. Reggie Jackson at 7,500. The minute reduction has capped his fantasy value. But if you think that him going up against the Rockets, which with Beverly, it's a little bit more of a different. If it was Jason Terry, it's another story. But with Beverly, who is more of a shutdown guy, I don't think I'm going to go with Jackson. James Harden at 10,700. I think he and the coaching staff realize now that if the Rockets are winning, it's got to be to do with him. It has to be him putting up numbers. So I can imagine him getting just a shitload of minutes. I can imagine him putting up some big numbers. He has had almost an 80-point game this season. At 10,700, yes, it's expensive, but you pretty much get what you pay for with James Harden. Dwight is still too expensive, 8,100. I don't know why that salary doesn't budge. It just doesn't come down. You can't use him. And same with Terrence Jones. We're not looking at Terrence Jones, really. The Denver Nuggets and the Milwaukee Bucks. Up next, we have the Bucks favored by 3. The total is 200.5. Gary Harris missed the last game with concussion symptoms. We need to check on his status. And General Grievous Vasquez missed Sunday's matchup with a sore ankle. The absence of Vasquez just allowed OJ Mayo and Jared Bayless to get a massive amount of minutes. And at 4,500 for Bayless, I think that he is a guy that is almost a lock for every lineup, especially against a Denver team who lets opposition backcourts go really big. 3,600 for OJ Mayo. He had a big game. Yep, he played 44 minutes. But over the last three, he's still averaging 20 points. And at 3,600, it's a pretty good deal because, yeah, Vasquez will come back. But it's not like a kid loves Grievous Vasquez. Mayo moved into the starting lineup. He played pretty well. I'm okay using OJ Mayo. And John Henson is not a bad tournament play. 3,500. The minutes are sort of back. He's averaging 19 across the last three. And again, when John Henson goes and has 6 blocks, you've got value there. But the consistency with him is a real concern. And Jason Kidd's consistency with him can be a concern. So it's hard to use him in a cash game. Nikola Jokic looks to be the starter again. He's really not putting up big numbers at the moment, though. But at 4,000, he's a punt play in one of your tournament lineups. Emmanuel Mudiay at 5,800, I like a bit. I don't love it, and it's not a great matchup, but with the change in the starting lineup, Bayless is not quite the defender that Carter Williams is. Maybe he gets a little bit more leeway. Greg Monroe at 7,500. I'm happy that the salary's come down, but I don't really like him here. Chris Middleton at 5,600, I think is superb value. I reckon he's a guy that he's obviously been trending up. This is an awesome matchup for him. I like it. I like Giannis at 7,000 as well. Not quite as much as I like Chris Middleton, but I do like what Giannis should be able to do here. Will Barton, he's been really sort of up and down. In general, he's pretty good, and this is a nice matchup for him at 5,300. I think that you can spend that salary on him, but it probably suits more to a tournament than necessarily to a cash game. Kenneth Faried, we think he'll be back in the starting lineup. We don't know what minutes he's going to get. It's a stay away for me. Stay away also on Danilo Gallinari and Gary Harris at 4,000. We just don't know his status at this point. Obviously, we're going to fade Jabari Parker and Michael Carter-Williams because they're likely not going to be starting and playing meaningful minutes. The next game is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Atlanta Hawks. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Hawks. This is a pretty big total. 211.5 points. The Thunder are favored by 2. So this screams, let's get our fantasy on. Let's get it all happening. Tiago Splitter is doubtful with that hip problem, so that means more minutes for Mike Muscala, most likely, and that's not going to really move the needle too much. But what we need to look at here is I think Jeff Teague is worth looking at. He's at 6,800. He's going to be pretty lowly owned after a real stinker against the Spurs, but the Thunder do allow point guards to put up numbers, and Teague has had some pretty big games this year. Dennis Schroeder has been under 20 minutes in about his last 3 matchups, so Teague is someone that I think at 6,800 you can work into a lineup. Same with Serge Ibaka. Now, he's only at 6,400, so that's not a big salary for him. He's averaging 25 points, real consistent 25-point performer, but again, he's going up against a team like the Thunder, up against the Hawks, who allow big men to put up more than they usually do. So he's someone to pay attention to. If you want to take a punt, you can take one on Steven Adams. He's averaging 20 across his last 3 at 4,200. There's a little bit of value there. Al Horford has now dipped under 7,000, and he has been quiet. There's no doubt he's been quiet, so I don't really think I want to get involved with him. Paul Millsap at 8,600. He's a consistent player. but he's not consistently high enough at 8,600 for me to look at him. Yeah, what about Russell Westbrook? 11,000. I need him to come under 11,000. Now that KD's back, he needs to be under that for me to consider him. 10,700 sort of price would be perfect. And Kevin Durant at 10,500. I would rather spend the 500 less and use Durant. He's averaging 50 across his last three. He put up 60 in the last game. Is Thabo going to be able to shut him down? You can't ever really shut Kevin Durant down. So I'm okay using it. I don't think it's an awesome matchup for him. I don't think it's an awesome situation at that price, but you can definitely make a case that he could easily put up 50 here. So what about Kent Bazemore? At 5,100, I can't wait to see what the Hawks do. I don't know that he gets the starting job back over Thabo in this one. I think that they'll want to put Thabo on Kevin Durant, and I think you might see Bazemore restricted to a 20 to 22 minute role. I don't really know. I've currently got Bazemore at 26 and Thabo at 24, but if I look into it a little bit more, I reckon, or if I'm sort of convincing myself here as I talk, I reckon we might see Thabo at 25, 26, and Bazemore dropping down to 24 just because of the matchup on Kevin Durant. Regardless, we're not using either of them in daily fantasy situations. If Bazemore's still around in your standard league, I'm happy to grab him, but I'm not convinced that he holds value for the rest of the season. I've said that a number of times so far this season. The next game is the San Antonio Spurs and the Chicago Bulls. The Spurs are favored by 3.5 points, a low total here, 190.5. Aaron Brooks is ruled out for the Bulls. Doug McDermott is questionable with an illness. Kirk Heinrich is dealing with a hip problem. So that's going to be a real concern if Heinrich and Brooks can't go. It looks like Heinrich will be able to go. But there is obviously some concern there. Concern? Now, I do apologize because I don't have the name in front of me. I'm going to see if I can find it. Just talk amongst yourselves for a second while I find this person's name. Maybe I'll sing to you. Do-do-do. Here we go. Jason Lemberg sent me a tweet today of an article that he found that I actually hadn't seen. So thank you for doing that, Jason. An article written by, where is it? Now I can't even find who wrote it. Vincent Goodwill, about the Bulls and about Butler potentially needing an MRI on his foot because he's dealing with severe foot pain. Now, Butler is a guy who has been injury prone throughout his career and is playing big minutes at the moment. So there's a definite concern there on him and his foot problem. Does it necessitate doing anything in terms of a trade in a standard long league? Well, you know that I was a guy who was not big on Butler coming into the season for head-to-head leagues. For Roto, I was a lot higher on him. I had him outside the top 20 in my head-to-head league projections or rankings. He's been okay this year. I wouldn't say that he's probably lived up to the hype of being the number 12 pick. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone will want to say something different and say, I'm absolutely pleased with getting Jimmy Butler at pick 12. But if he's got an issue with his foot and it turns out to be something like a plantar fasciitis or something like that, which could be a serious condition, I think you have to be a little bit concerned. So that's more season-long stuff on Butler, but in this game, he's going up against Kawhi Leonard. Like, forget about him for daily fantasy. The other thing that we need to look now, I think it was Jake that tweeted me in, Butler versus Kawhi, is it fantasy hell? And you'd think on the surface, yes. But when the Bulls matched up against the Pacers, Jimmy Butler was on Paul George. And Paul George tore the Bulls a new one. So Leonard is in that sort of form that I don't think that Jimmy Butler's going to be able to stop him. Especially if Butler's hobbled. So Kawhi Leonard's at 9,100. He's averaging 46. I'm okay with spending 9,100 on Kawhi. He is just tearing teams apart. Hopefully this game remains close, so he has to play 36, 37 minutes and put up big stats. But I do like Kawhi in this one. Derrick Rose is someone to maybe look at 6,900. That price is appealing. He's averaging 31.6 across his last three, so he's not completely bereft of fantasy value. He kills your field goal percentage, but daily leagues, we don't really care too much about that. Nikola Mirotic at 5,900 is a super value guy as well, averaging 33 across the last three. There was so much early panic and abuse hurled towards me in certain areas about my projection of Mirotic, but he has looked to have righted the ship. And anyone who watches Bulls games or looks at anything with the Bulls, they need him out there, and they need him to play big minutes, and they look better when he's out there. Now, sometimes he looks very ungainly. Sometimes he's throwing up just horrific pump fakes and attempts to draw fouls, and you just want someone to pull him aside and go, look, Nico, come on, mate. Like, that doesn't look like a real shot. Everyone can tell. You just look like a dickhead. Stop it. And maybe someone's done that to him, and his play has improved. His confidence is improved. He's looking really good. And I don't mind him at 5,900. Danny Green is still the guy who is pissing everyone off, basically. He's priced at 4,100. And you know one of these days that he's going to go off and he's going to score 40 points. It's daily fantasy points at 4,100, and you're going to be pissed off that you didn't roster him. But it's getting increasingly hard to rely on him to do that or to even think. Now, we're not looking at him in a cash game format. No, thank you. In a tournament lineup, I can understand putting him into a lineup, but it is quite difficult to do. From a season-long perspective, the thing that's really hurting him is his blocks and steals. They're at half of what they were last year. His rebounds, his assists, they're exactly the same. His three-pointers are less as well, but that can be adjusted when his shooting gets up. He won't shoot 34%. He'll be back up at 43%, 40% from three, and that'll fix that. He needs to get the defensive stats happening, and maybe it's a confidence thing where his shot's not falling, he's not super engaged on defense, because not like anything's happened in that Spurs backcourt to change the way that he has to play. I can see people dropping him, and I understand it. I would probably still give it a little bit of time, maybe another week or two, but it's not must hold to me anymore. And that's something I didn't think I'd really be saying at this point in the season. Not much else value-wise, I don't think. Yeah, a touch on Jimmy Butler. I don't. It's not a great look for him going up against Kawhi and guys like Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson. We avoid Manu Ginobili. He's 4,700, and for as well as he's playing, that's too expensive though. And Tony Parker's the other one who has a little bit of interest, averaging 28 across the last three. He's priced at 5,500. This is a favorable matchup for him, so I'm not against using Tony Parker in this one. The Utah Jazz and the Golden State Warriors is up next. The Warriors are favored by 8. I sent out a tweet earlier on that the Warriors have won their last 5 games. Like, no shit. They've won all their games. But they've won their last 5 games by a combined 97 points. It's pretty good. It's pretty, pretty, pretty good. The Warriors favored by 8 here. The total's 201. Harrison Barnes is out. He's out for the next 3 games. We know that. Brandon Rush started in his place. Leandro Barbosa should get some extra run as well, but none of them really. Look, you can look at Barbosa in a tournament at 3,800, definitely, but none of them stand out as being awesome options. For the Jazz, Trey Burke is probable with back spasms. Rodney Hood is questionable with back spasms, which is weird because he played the last game with them as well, so you think that he'd be okay. And Derek Favors is probable after a personal issue, so he will be back in the lineup. I love Hood at 4,800 in this one. I think that he's been really consistent and he's been really valuable. So I think he's in a good spot. And the Warriors do allow opposition wings to put up some decent numbers. That's why I also like Alec Burks at 5,400. He put up 31 in their last game. In 32 minutes, he's someone that I think that is in a nice position here. Gordon Hayward at 6,500. Yeah, you can use him at that price. That is not that expensive. And Rudy Gobert is down to 7,100. And if you're looking for that mid-price center, he definitely has some value in that sort of spot. Put up 35 in the last game, averaging 26. So he can be a 30 to 35 point guy, but he's been nothing but a disappointment this season, I think it's fair to say. As has Klay Thompson. He's down at 5,900 now, so that's real cheap. He's got 18 points a game in his last three. That's FanDuel points, so that's not even real scoring points. But at 5,900, if he gives you 30 points, it's a good night. Now, can he do it? Against the Jazz, I'm not keen on using him. And he's going to come down to a place where his price is that low, where you're going to have to. He's not there yet, though. Derek Favors at 8,000. He's not coming off an injury, so there's a little bit of, you don't have to be concerned about that. But I think that 8,000 is too expensive for him. Steph Curry at 10,900. Now, it's really hard to bet against Steph, but going up against the Jazz is nightmare for point guards most of the time. He's not a normal point guard. Yes, I know that. But I think there are other options on the board that I want to spend the money on. And can Draymond Green get his third consecutive triple-double? At 8,200, I'm not willing to find out at that price. Well, I'll find out anyway, but I'm not willing to have him on my team at that price. The Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings. The Mavericks are favored by 2.5 and another big total, the biggest on the board, actually, 214 for this game. Chandler Parsons is, I've got him listed as questionable because it's the first of a back-to-back, so we don't know if he's going to play this one or play the next one. I'd say chances are he does play this one. Chances are we also don't use him in daily fantasy, although his salary is coming down enough where we might have to start looking at it. Even if he plays 25 minutes, if he gets down to 3,800, you'd have to consider that. DeMarcus Cousins has also been upgraded to questionable with his back problem. If he plays, I do like him at 10,600. He's shown an ability coming back from injury to put up big numbers straight away, so I like him there. Wes Matthews has stunk lately. At 4,700, though, you're not investing a massive amount in him. And a tournament guy would want to have a look at Ray Felton, 3,700. He got big minutes with JJ Barea sideline. Barea is out again in this one, so Felton is someone that you can take a look at. I'm not looking at him in cash games, though, but he's averaged 20 across the last three. He's going to get you 28 minutes or so and put up 20 to 22 points, I would think would be his sort of area, which can be really valuable. Now, Rajon Rondo in the last game's minutes were reduced, and there was some foul trouble involved then. At 8,300, I'm not risking him in this one, nor am I playing Darren Collison at 5,000. Darren Williams at 6,500, I'm okay with that. I think that that's okay, and against the Sacramento team, who does allow point guards to have a pretty good run of things. And Rudy Gay at 7,100, definitely bounced back in his last game. It's a okay sort of option here, nothing too spectacular. Now, another guy you can look at as a punt is Ben McLemore. At 3,800, he put up 27 in the last game. He's back starting, he's back getting sort of solid minutes, so you can look at him in a tournament format. One game to go, and that is, I think we've been going quite long on today's podcast, Portland versus the Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 7.5 here. The total is 206.5 points. Injury-wise, nothing to really worry about. Myers Leonard, you think, would get somewhat of a boost in his minutes, but I'm still not looking at him, even though he is 4,400. Let's wait a game or two for that. Blake Griffin at 9,100 is a guy that should thrive here. I think that this is an awesome situation for him. El-Farouq Aminu still looks okay, but his production has been down, so I'd look at him maybe as a contrarian tournament play. DeAndre Jordan at 76, I don't want much to do with him there. Chris Paul at 8,900, one of the better higher price point guards on the board. You can save yourself $2,000 on him or Steph Curry. It's, you're going up against CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, so there's not great defenders in his way, but he hasn't been producing fantastic numbers, but 39 points in his last three is okay. So I can sort of see using Chris Paul. Lillard at 9,400, I still think is a pretty good option, although against Chris Paul, not superb. 6,700 for CJ McCollum. He's averaging only 32.5, which is pretty much right on 6,700 value, so I'd be okay using him. And he was red hot in the last game. Not much else to really talk about here, I think, from this game. All right, that is it, guys. Let us now bring up the daily fantasy plays for tomorrow by position and by price range. At point guard, the cheap option, Jared Bayless at 4,500. You know my thoughts on him. Jeff Teague at 6,800, and then Chris Paul as the expensive option as 8,900. And if any of you don't know how I do these picks, these are not like my best bets or anything like this. It's like picking from each position a guy less than 5,000, a guy between 5,000 and 7,500, and then a 7,500 guy plus. So I've got Bayless as the cheap one, Teague, and then Chris Paul. Shooting guards, Gerald Green at 3,700 with no Luol Deng. Makes sense. Alec Burks at 5,400, and then James Harden as the expensive option at 10,700. Small forwards, a couple of Pistons here. Stanley Johnson at 3,500. Marcus Morris at 5,900, both good options against the Thunder. And Kawhi Leonard at 9,100. Power forwards, John Henson at 35, punting that one. Serge Ibaka at 6,400 and Blake Griffin at 91 and the center position, Clint Capella at 46. Rudy Gobert at 7,100 and Big Andre Drummond at 9,300. That is it. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Follow me on Twitter, as you can see on the screen, at redrock_bball. Check out moneyball.com.au if you're in Australia or New Zealand. And, of course, Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm for all of your fantasy needs and real-life basketball entertainment. We're done. Thank you, guys. Leave a review on iTunes. Leave a subscription. Subscribe on YouTube and iTunes as well. You know it's superb, and you know that I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
percentages.